You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
Many years ago in Japan, I was interpreting for a visiting teacher who had come to the monastery. And one of the questions that was asked, maybe by a German monk, was, but why do we have to open our eyes when we sit? And I'm always anticipating the answers, and I'm thinking of all the reasons. And instead of any of those, the teacher says, because the Buddha was awakened when he saw the morning star, so his eyes were open. That was it. Everybody kind of laughed because, one, it was unexpected, and two, it's on the surface, it's a kind of fundamentalist answer, right? The Buddha did it, so you do it, and stop asking questions. But there's actually so much to unpack in that answer. We have to proactively unravel the story that we have about the Buddha, and especially about that moment. If you're like me, if you're like most people, you imagine that the Buddha sat down beneath the Bodhi tree and he supposedly got into exactly this posture. And then, because all the causes and conditions were correct and because his intention was so powerful, he went to a very, very, very deep place. And if it's a movie, you can imagine it. He sits there and the music is kind of getting just a little bit loud, a little bit loud. And then he closes his eyes. And in the moment he closes his eyes, you're suddenly in this kind of moving space tunnel, you know, you're going somewhere, right? And it's going, that you're drilling way down, and then suddenly it stops. And when it stops, that's when he sees the thing, whatever it is, right? And I'm saying this as if it's silly, but in fact, I've always kind of pictured this a little bit. Even when I'm telling myself, don't picture this, I picture this a little bit, that he sat down and he went somewhere. Somewhere that, at least within, you know, most of Buddhism's telling of the story, no one had ever gone before. So we have that natural inclination. And it's not as if the traditions are, you know, working overtime to dissuade you of this idea. It's all very magical and very potent and very distant from your experience. He glows in most of the paintings, right? He's giving off some sort of energetic heat. And then, though, we have this other part, which is what the teacher was saying. That in the moment that we call the moment of awakening, his eyes were open, just the way that our eyes are open. He wasn't somewhere else. He was right there. And when I say right there, I don't mean it to have some sort of mystical sauce on it. I mean, he was really just right there. He was in the countryside. He was sitting beneath a tree, and he was listening to the birds that were probably just waking up, just like we are. He heard every bug that night. He heard every rustle in the grass. He probably heard a few things. He wasn't sure what they were. And he had little moments of, oh, what's that? because unlike what we're doing, it wasn't particularly safe to just sit outside all by yourself in the middle of India. And he felt the wind. And he felt himself breathe. And it was very, very present. The whole thrust of this story is that he had spent years doing the opposite of that. He spent years drilling down. He spent years rigidly forcing himself to somehow, through pure will, penetrate the mysteries. He spent years with his eyes closed, looking into his mind and trying to move beyond the reality of his body in this moment, the reality of the physical world in this moment, so that he could see what was in there. He dug and dug and dug and dug and dug, and he came to the conclusion that that wasn't working. And according to the story, remembered this moment when he was a child, when he had sat in a kind of just spacious awareness and felt something vast. So he said, well, I'll do that. And he sat like that all night, completely awake to everything that was around him. Just like we talked about this morning, right? And probably doing just what we're doing today, of feeling ourselves get a little bit comfortable and feeling some idea take on a kind of a soft haze and then saying, no, I'm going to be here. I've done that part. The punchline of the Buddha's awakening was that it couldn't have happened if he hadn't been awake. Literally, deliberately awake in that moment to where he was. There's nothing in the course of that night that he could have heard that was somehow special compared to what we hear now. There's nothing that appeared. There's no smell that was just the right smell. There was nothing about his circumstance that was different from these circumstances in terms of that basic quality of just being present to it. He chose to be awake in the most mundane way. We have some confusion, I think, around the idea of distraction. If we say that someone is easily distracted, what we imagine is that everything pulls their attention away, right? So, ooh, squirrel, right? And then they see the squirrel. And then something else comes up. Oh! You know, they can't stop. That looks distracted to us. But that idea of distraction makes light, in a sense, of how we are really distracted. And as I've said many times, I don't know what your distraction is, but I know you have one, at least one. I know that you have a something that when you feel a little relaxed, or when you don't want to look at something else, you know that you can pull that out of your pocket and you can look at it. You can turn it over. Maybe you have 10 of them. Some people have one or two. And it can seem so single-minded that we keep turning back to this thing, right? But that's not single-mindedness. That's distraction in its deepest sense. It's the thing that we know we can turn to at any time to not be here. If you're at a bus stop and your bus is late and you forgot your phone and you don't have a book and there's nothing else that you can do to feed your mind, you have that thing. You know, well, I can chew on that a little bit. It's so difficult for us to talk about the story of the Buddha without talking about the aha moment. I never want to push that part, but let's acknowledge it for a moment. Somehow there's a before and there's an after. Something happened. Well, how did that happen? Without going into what it was, we can say a little bit. We know, I think from our own experience and also just from studies, that breakthrough moments don't happen because you're trying to make them happen. Right? If you're a writer and you're staring at your screen, just staring, it's not that it'll never happen, but generally speaking, that kind of contraction around making it go, it doesn't work. Putting your hands on your face and saying, think, 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 doesn't seem to get you to think in the way that you want to think, right? And so we find that artists and writers who rely on these kinds of breakthrough moments, they almost universally talk about the importance of taking walks. They work, and they get up, and they take a walk. And maybe when they take a walk, they're still chewing on the same thing, but now they can't just chew on that because they have to look where they're going. And now there's a duck, and now it's starting to rain. And this thing can't get stuck in its little loop, right? It breathes without you trying to make it breathe. And sometimes in that process, something gets in, or it takes a shape that it hadn't taken. And you say, oh, I was forcing this. There's something else. That is the simplest version of the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. He sat in the most painful ways and he said, wake up, 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 for years. And then he just took the simplest version of it and he sat and he listened to the crickets. And something got in that hadn't gotten there before. Don't get stuck on that. Because if you do, the next time that you sit still and you straighten out your back and you let the birds come in, you'll start thinking, now it's coming. Because now I've laid the ground. Drop that. It's enough. Just to be awake is enough. One of the greatest mistakes we make in a tradition like this is to get confused about awakening, to only think of awakening with a capital A, to insist on that and say that's the prize, and forget that in most of our lives, we're just not awake at all. Uppercase or lowercase, because we have that distraction, that thing that is inviting us away. We forego the simple, clear, available thing, thinking that somehow we're moving toward this other huge thing. That we don't know what it is exactly, but it feels like it's been promised. And in the worst case, we sleep our way there specifically because we're aiming for it. creating loops and loops and loops within our minds where we think that that's how we're looking for awakening. And we never see what's in front of us. We never notice what's happening because we've decided that our lives have an arc. And that the climax is this not yet moment of waking up. It's always out there. The Buddha, and it really doesn't matter for this story if we think of him as real or mythological, because the principles just work. Somehow the Buddha by letting the world in had this aha moment about the nature of the mind and the nature of time and the nature of phenomena and tied it all up in that way that people do. It kind of happened like that, and it kind of took 35 years, and it kind of took a night. There's no way to define it. And different traditions have done different things with that, but this tradition took from that the idea that the awakeness is the key. Right? Not what got tied up in a bow, but more the availability to it. There's a quiet that goes with being awake. Again, I'm speaking of awake in the simplest way. That when you remain alert, when you choose not to pursue any of those distractions, that creates this very open space. This very receptive space that is the complement of generosity. I don't think you can have one without the other. Because otherwise you're trying to hold something. And that means that you're too engaged for anything else. So, for the rest of this afternoon, and then for the rest of your life, if you would notice that thing that's pulling you. And not reject it, but learn how it feels not to be taken in. And I'll stop there.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.